Okay, so I will begin by outlining the discussion format for the next 2 hours. The discussion will begin with the CMS measure 1789. The chair will request that the measure developer will provide a 10-minute response to each of the requests for further information discussed by the committee yesterday. For CMS, these requests include, as a preliminary start, although if there are additional questions, feel free to ask, details on the distributional properties for small hospitals using HLM, the use of the following covariates and risk model, including FES, and hospital volume, and the concerns and additional concerns raised this morning, calibration curves or risk decile plots, and the usability and use of this measure for quality improvement. The committee will then have 30 minutes to discuss and ask further clarification questions of the measure developer and then decide whether to move on to a final vote on scientific acceptability and usability and an overall vote on the measure. We will use the same format for the NCQA measure.
I would just like the developers, welcome back, and thank you very much for being so responsive. And we have 10 minutes you're going to get for an uninterrupted presentation, and then we're going to have an additional 30-minute discussion with you about the range of topics that, you know, that Tarun just outlined, in addition to any other focused concerns, all caps, that the committee has.
Thank you. We really appreciate the opportunity to come back. I'm going to begin with calibration, and let me just, before I show you the slides, let me just orient the group to what this is. So the calibration question, and correct me if I'm providing something that you don't want, is the question of how well the model is able to predict risk for aggregate groups of patients. So if you're looking at low-risk patients, how well is the model able to predict their low risk? And if you look at high risk, how well is the model able to predict that? And in the ideal world, we would plot the observed readmission risk for an aggregate group of patients versus the expected and then or the predicted, and we would see a 45-degree line. It should be perfectly aligned. And last night, I couldn't quite figure out how to convert our tables into exactly that graph, and so I'm showing you a slightly different graph, the same idea, which is both the observed and the predicted plotted simultaneously. So let's show the first graph, and I'll show you how this is shown. So on the bottom here, we have risk decile. So on the far left, we have the lowest risk patients, and on the far right, we have the highest risk patients in deciles. And on the left, we have the readmission risk. And what you want to see here is not a 45-degree line, because we're not plotting it in that way. What you want to see here is overlap of these two points of the observed and the predicted as much as possible. And ideally, they should be perfectly overlapped. So this is our medicine cohort, and you will see they are very, very close. All the way through with a slight over-prediction of risk in the higher and lower ends, but really pretty close. And if you look to the next slide, you'll see our surgery gynecology, again, a slightly bigger spread up at the high end, but generally speaking, pretty good, we think, risk prediction. Similarly, in the next graph, you'll see our cardiorespiratory, where it's identical, really total overlap. I swear to you that there are purple things or blue things underneath there. And in our next, we have cardiovascular, again, slight over-prediction at the high end, so we are giving people a little more credit for having higher risk patients than they really do, but pretty close, and in neurology, again, very close. So we would make the contention that the models, each model performs quite well on our calibration. So the next topic that you asked us to talk about was the issue of small volume hospitals and hierarchical regression and what this all means. And so we said that we would come back today with some data about how the small volume hospitals perform and so that we could put some data around this discussion. So if you turn to the next slide, this is a distribution of volume, just so you get a sense as to what we're talking about in our data set. Remember, this is all condition. This is not just single condition. And you can see that our median volume here is 750 patients. These are big volume observations or hospitals. We sort of arbitrarily decided we would define small volume for the purposes of today's discussion at the 10th percentile. So we'll just take the 10th, you know, the smallest 10% of hospitals in our data set. And even those have 88 or fewer patients. So even our 10th percentile at 88 is quite a lot. And you'll recall that we don't publicly report anything below 25 currently. So the number that's actually between 25 and 88 is only about 200 hospitals. It's very small number that has even this very small number of patients. And this is, again, about 5,000 hospitals altogether. Now, we weren't sure if you were thinking about small hospitals in terms of the actual hospital itself, so we also defined it for today's purpose by bed size. So if you look at bed size of the hospitals, now this is using American Hospital Association data, so we don't have data on every hospital, so we have data on 4,700 of them. And you'll see, again, the median hospital in this data set has 100 beds, and the 10th percentile and smaller hospitals has 25 or fewer beds. So these are very small hospitals, hospitals with 25 beds only. And again, there's, you know, about 400 or so. These is 10% of the sample. Okay, so let me show you results both for hospitals as small hospitals as defined by volume and small hospitals as defined by bed size. Okay, so in the volume, once we take out the hospitals that don't even have 25, we are left with 292 hospitals that have 88 or fewer patients a year. So again, less than, you know, a couple a week. And you'll see, I don't have an arrow, but you'll see, first of all, the medians are the same as you would expect. And that the range, so let's take, say, the 10th percentile to the 90th percentile, the sort of distribution of it, is quite wide, slightly narrower than the overall data set, but not that much narrower, and still a pretty substantial range in performance. And you'll see this even more dramatically with the 25 bed or fewer hospitals. Oh, cool. Of course, I'm going to make myself blind, facing the wrong way. See, I am. There we go. All right, so... So we've got if you look at, you know, the extremes around 10% to 90%, they are slightly different but relatively similar. And in bed size, when we're taking less than 25, here we have more hospitals, 400 of them, still about 10% of our sample, the smallest 10%. And here you'll see that the 10th percentile and 90th percentile are, you know, again, very similar. So we still have wide distributions of performance, similar distributions of performance, even for the small hospitals versus the large hospitals. So you would argue that what we're not seeing is a very tight pull to the mean that people are concerned about. So we're not seeing the sort of 10th and 90th percentile all tucked right around that median in the middle, which is, I think, the main concern that the committee was expressing. Despite the fact that we don't empirically see very much to be concerned about, I want to just take a minute to explain a little bit what our modeling approach does, because we didn't really have a chance to explain that yesterday, and I think that there's some confusion about what it is that we're doing with this model. I want to first say that this is a widely used, pretty standard approach. It's used in the NQF endorsed public report measures that we have now for the three conditions, but it's also used in many, many other NQF endorsed measures, as well as national registries in Canada and UK and elsewhere. So this is, in many respects, the standard approach to modeling. There's two things that this approach does. The first thing is that it takes into account the clustering of patients within hospitals. And what we mean by that is that most statistical models assume independence of samples. They assume that any observation's likelihood of an outcome is totally independent of some other observation's likelihood of an outcome. And we know that that's just not true for this data set. Our data set violates that assumption because we have patients within hospitals, and we believe there's a hospital effect. Just like we use this the same approach for looking at education, where we're trying to assess student performance, we know that student performance is affected by their teacher's quality. And so the same thing, we use the same kind of modeling approach to look at teacher quality. So because we know that the samples are not independent, we have to account for the standard error that we get, and this model accounts for that. Now, there are other ways to do that as well. This is not the only way to do that. But that's one advantage of this approach. The second thing that this model does is it takes into account the increased variability in small hospitals, as well as our knowledge about them upfront. And I want to explain that by way of an example. So if I take a quarter out of my pocket and I flip it five times and I get four heads, then I have a heads proportion of 80%. Now I'm going to flip it again. And before I flip it again, I want to ask you, what do you think the likelihood of heads is going to be? Now, in a traditional approach, even one that accounts for clustering, and even one that accounts for the hospital effect, we would say, well, the data that we have suggests that it's 80%. It's a small volume, so we know we have a wide confidence interval, so we'll say, it could be anything from 50 to 100, but with a central tendency of 80. But nobody here would take that bet, right? No one here is going to give me 4 to 1 odds, and I'm going to get hit when I flip this coin again. Because we have some knowledge about coins, right? We know that 99.999999% of coins are fair. So we expect that when we flip this coin again, actually what we're going to get is 50-50 hits. So which estimate is closer to truth in the universe? The 80% that we get just from the data, from the standard model, or the 50% that we get from pulling it towards what we know a priori about coins? And that's what our model does. So our model accounts for the fact that when we have a lot of variability, when we have small samples, and when we know something about that sample, that it's in fact more accurate to use that prior assumption of what we know about that process to understand what the estimate is likely to be. And that's what our model accomplishes. So if I flip this coin 500 times and I got 400 heads, and you ask me, what am I going to get the next time I flip it? I'm not going to say 50-50, right? Because even though I know something about coins, now I have a very large sample, and I'm much less inclined to think that this coin is fair. So the larger the sample you have, the more you can trust the data that you have. But in a small sample, it's more accurate and more fair to consider that prior probability. So that brings me to the next question that the panel asked us to address, which is, well, are small hospitals hospitals? So should we treat our a priori assumption as that they have a hospital effect, or are small hospitals small hospitals? And should we consider instead that their a priori assumption is that of the small hospital? Therefore, should we include some kind of volume indicator in our model? And that's an interesting question and a sort of policy question. I will say up front that we don't have data to suggest that small hospitals in aggregate behave differently from large hospitals for the outcome of readmission. We haven't looked at it carefully in our data, so I can't speak to our data. We're not aware really of solid evidence about this, whereas there's a very good evidence base around volume outcome for mortality or for complications. For readmission, we don't have that data. So the first thing I'm going to say is we're actually not sure that this is a problem. And it's not obvious that it should be a problem necessarily. Small hospitals might do a pretty good job of taking good care of their patients and doing medication reconciliation because they have fewer patients to handle. So it's not intrinsically obvious to us. And second, even if it were the case, it's not clear to us that all small hospitals are the same and should therefore be pulled that way. So we have leaned up until now not to including volume as a separate indicator, not to considering a separate upfront assumption for small hospitals. And we'd rather just level the playing field and say, look, we're going to treat small hospitals as hospitals. We're going to assume that their baseline is the same baseline as all other hospitals until proven otherwise by data.
Not to interrupt, but I just want to say you're at 10 minutes, but I know you have a few other slides to go, so we'll just give you 5 more minutes to just finish up, and there'll be time for back and forth, but we just wanted to make sure.
Great. So our next slide is about SCS, which is the next topic that you asked to address, and I wanted to show you, again, the data in our data set about how hospitals perform in terms of their proportion of dual eligible patients. So we divided our data set, sort of a priori, into 4 quartiles, and less than 10% of their patient population having Medicare and Medicaid, all the way up to more than 30% of their patients being dual eligible. And what we wanted to show you were a few things. I'm going to use this crazy thing again here. Okay, so first of all, the median result here. So the median result for the hospitals with the fewest Medicaid patients is 16.5, and for the hospitals with the largest number of Medicaid patients is 16.9. Yes, there is a relationship. It's very small. The second thing is that the hospitals with the highest proportion of Medicaid patients, a quarter of them perform better than the average hospital with very few Medicaid patients. So the overlap is substantial. There is not necessarily a defining sort of destiny around the proportion of SCS patients that you have in your hospital. And that's one major reason that we were not that inclined to try to include SES in our models because, in fact, hospitals can perform very well with high proportion of Medicaid patients, as I think our the state Medicaid director in Massachusetts demonstrated yesterday. The second thing around, I'll just leave that as it is for SES, and I will just comment lastly because you wanted us to comment on usability. So there were two, I think, main usability concerns that the panel raised yesterday. One was a question of usability for patients, payers, consumers, around the question of, well, you know, will they be able to use data around small hospitals? Will we be able to find a difference, or is it just going to be all these hospitals we can't tell? And I hope that I've demonstrated to you that that's just not a concern for the vast majority of hospitals in our data set, that there are some hospitals with very, very few patients for whom we do pull the results a little bit towards the mean, but I hope that I've seen that that's actually an appropriate way to estimate their risk rather than a bias. There was another concern raised about how patients and payers could interpret hospital compare data, and I will only comment that it's hard to present data in confidence intervals, and it probably could be done better, or potentially it could be done better on hospital compare, and that would be great. But that's not a function of the measure per se, that's just a function of the way you choose to report the results, which could be reported in many different ways and probably could be done better. And lastly, I wanted to comment that there were questions raised about usability for hospitals. And here I want to comment a little bit about our intention in making the measure also from a personal perspective, because I chair the readmissions committee at Yale, and we are a high outlier for many of these conditions, so we are on one hand making these measures and then penalizing ourselves for them. And so it's my job to fix that as well. And so let me just comment that we built this measure for two purposes. One is for public reporting, and public reporting is a heavy responsibility. You have to be really convinced that you're doing it well and doing it right, so that you're adequately able to compare different types of hospitals. And I think you've all seen and agreed with our risk adjustment and our strategy for defining our outcomes and our inclusion criteria have really been carefully built to make sure that we're appropriately able to compare hospitals. But the second reason we built this measure was for quality improvement. And what we intend this measure to do is to allow hospitals to benchmark themselves against other hospitals, to identify areas in which quality improvement is necessary, and then to catalyze activity. And in fact, we not only built a hospital-wide outcome, but because we have five cohorts, we can actually provide the detailed data on each of these service lines within a hospital, which increases the usability for a hospital in terms of figuring out which areas it's bad, it's sort of not doing well in. But what we did not build this measure for was for use in rapid cycle interventions within a hospital. Now, I, as the readmission chair, am very preoccupied with my real-time readmission rate, and we track that monthly. We track it across the hospital. We track it per unit. We track it by condition. We are very vigorous about tracking it. We do tons of interventions. We want to know how well they're working. And we don't need a risk-adjusted measure for that because my case mix doesn't change that much month to month. My distribution of conditions doesn't change much. In fact, my raw readmission rate at Yale New Haven Hospital, I regret to say, has been rock solid stable for 3 years. It hasn't budged by even as much as 0.2%. It is exactly the same. So when you're using data internally to track your own results and your results over time, you don't need a risk-adjusted measure, and that's not what we built this for. This is really so that we can identify, do we have a problem at all, and what kind of a problem do we have?
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, now I would invite the committee to have a 30-minute discussion along the lines that we discussed in executive session, and we're open for comments and questions. Ashish?
So first of all, thank you guys for doing all of that extra work on incredibly short notice. I can't imagine what your evening and morning were like, but I know that the committee is really grateful that you guys did all of this, so thank you. If you can go back to the slide on volume for a second, or size, however, the next one. Oops, go back, go forward to next one. Thank you. Perfect. So I want to bring up the example that you use with the coins. And you flip the coin five times, you got four heads. Now, if we all got a coin, and we all flipped it five times, and we all got four heads, one would not, I think, at that point, let's say there were 200 of us in the room, you wouldn't begin by saying that the central tendency here is 50%. You would say there's something systematic going on. This coin is, these coins are funny. And you need empirical evidence to show that. So no one, I think, has ever suggested that you take a single small hospital with five observations and do anything. That would be silly. There's actually very good evidence. We had a paper in Annals of Internal Medicine this past year. We have basically done, but and it's out in the literature. So this is not unpublished work. So the paper in Annals of Internal Medicine showed a very nice volume readmission rate relationship. We've done this, and other people have done this, using identical risk adjustment models to what CMS uses. We just don't shrink. And to go back to the coin example, if you individually shrink each coin, five flips, everybody comes out at 50%. Then when you aggregate it, it looks like, hey, these coins are at 50%, when we know that if you had not shrunk and looked at them in aggregate, there was something going on. What's really interesting to me when I look at the numbers you've pointed out, so you didn't run the numbers without shrinking, I understand. But when I look at those, first of all, what's interesting is that small hospitals have slightly lower readmission rates than large hospitals. That the upper and lower quartile performance for the small hospitals is better than the large hospitals. And the 90th percentile and the 10th percentile performance is better for the small hospitals than the large hospitals. And that's really interesting. And then when you think about who the outliers are going to be, what happens when you shrink it in the way that you choose to is that if you work at a large hospital, you're far more likely to be labeled as an outlier because the data make it so that so the small hospitals can pretty much never make it as an outlier, or your performance has to be dramatically worse in order for that to happen. And so it is a fairness issue, but it's also, in my mind, how you use the data. And I guess the question is, what's the philosophical problem with using past performance? I understand that volume raises a series of questions, but what's the problem with saying, in the prediction model, if you have been, let's say your readmission rate has been 35% for 5 years in a row, we're not going to begin in year six with the assumption that you're at the national average again. We have 5 years of data suggesting that you are where you are. Is there a mathematical problem with that? Is there a philosophical problem with that? Wouldn't that be more friendly to consumers because it would actually use the information that's available?
Shall I respond to that? These are important questions. And to a large extent, these are policy questions in terms of how you want to handle hospitals and how you want to think about leveling the playing field. I want to just first correct one thing, which is these are HCLM results. So it's very hard to say what small hospitals are actually performing. You can't use these data for that question. Now, because we've already assumed an a priori. So I don't really know what the results would look like had we not done that. So these are hierarchical regression results. So we've already done the procedure that I talked about in the sense of assuming the average hospital, and it's pulled it in that way. So we don't. But you were commenting on some differences, and it's hard to know if they would be worse or if they would be better without that. The second thing I want to say is that let's suppose we pick the different mean to pull small hospitals to, right? So we would say, okay, you're a small hospital, your average is going to be slightly higher, say, than the hospitals at large. So what does that do? That, first of all, so now we've got kind of a bumpy playing field instead of a flat playing field. And we're saying, okay, if you're a small hospital who's performing very well, we're now going to pull you higher because your average small hospital performs worse, and we make it probably virtually impossible for a small hospital to look like they're better than average. Conversely, we make it much easier for small hospitals to look worse than average because we're pulling them in that direction. And it remains an open question to us whether that's the appropriate measure to take, given that we don't really know that all small hospitals are homogenous in that way, and that it's sort of appropriate to change the playing field for them. Now, this is a hospital-wide measure we're talking about, not a condition-specific measure. So this is not a sort of condition. Whether there's a volume-outcome relationship for specific conditions is different from whether that's true at the hospital level at large.
Okay. What I would ask, though, Ashish, is that we keep the questions concise and the responses concise. Thank you.
I'll reiterate my question, which is there are lots of ways of doing it, and we don't need to get into a discussion about that. How about the hospital's past performance? It's pretty fair, and you could argue that it's probably the best predictor in aggregate of a hospital's performance is its past performance.
Yeah, so I think that's a reasonable approach. We have not looked at that, so I can't tell you how it would change the outcomes or how it would change the measure.
Thanks very much. Other questions? Bruce?
I just want to reiterate Ashish's thanks for all the hard work, and I'm going to ask a slightly different technical question. Your measure represents the volume-weighted geometric mean of these cohorts. Do you have any concerns about individual hospitals still being dominated by a particular cohort, and whether that would lead to any sort of out-of-sample comparisons where one hospital's evaluation is still dominated by one particular service line, and then you're creating an impression of perhaps more standardization there than there really is?
Well, we debated this a little bit, and our feeling is that we want to represent what hospitals are actually seeing, so that because we volume weight, we are allowing the patients that hospitals really see to dominate their measure. And so if a hospital is dominated by one cohort, that's because those are the patients it's predominantly seeing, and we think that's actually appropriate.
So, in effect, what you're saying is if any other hospital in the country had to do what we have to do, this is what the expectation would be.
Yeah, so for each cohort, we're comparing your performance on the patients in that cohort to all other hospitals' performance for patients in that cohort. And then we weight your performance on that cohort by the number of patients you have seen in that cohort to give you your average result.
Thanks. Laurent?
Thanks again for doing all that work. Very quick question. For your calibration plots, were those an independent data sample?
Yes. So obviously we can't do it on the derivation sample because then we have perfect. That by definition is perfect. So what we use, we have a split sample, 2007-2008 combined. We split them randomly in half. These data that I'm showing you are from the validation of the 07-08 validation sample. We have similar data for 2009, which I'm not showing you, but I will tell you that they're very similar.
Richard?
Again, thank you for the presentation. In the data on the socioeconomic impact, I've heard a couple of explanations, but one is that, well, there are other comorbidities and involved with higher Medicaid populations. And so what you're showing us is it's not possible to discern the marginal effects of this. To do that, you'd have to include it in the model and see. Do you know if there are marginal effects to the Medicaid population? And if so, how would you handle those marginal effects?
So you're asking if we added some kind of measure of SES to our model, would our model perform better? Mm-hmm. We didn't do those analyses for two reasons. One is it's actually very hard to come up with a reliable and acceptable proxy for SES using administrative data. We are not really aware of any measure that we think has appropriate validity. The second reason is that let's suppose we put that in the model and it did improve the performance of the model, we're not sure how to interpret that. Because we don't understand still, we can't disentangle what proportion of real outcome difference that's attributable to SES has to do with intrinsic characteristics of the patients that are just totally unavoidable, and what proportion has to do with quality of the hospital bias or the ability of the hospital to handle the patients or the type of health literacy materials you give or the type of social support or the community relationships you build and so on and so forth. So even if we found the relationship or an improvement in the model, it's not clear how we would interpret that.
Thank you. Other questions?
Ashish?
Just, I have a quick interpretation. Can you go forward a few slides? It was something you guys popped up yesterday showing the distribution. I just want to make sure I understood some of the numbers. I just saw it flash up. Go forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's by volume. Was there, maybe that's all there is. There was a slide you showed yesterday that basically showed the distribution of the performance. And it's in the technical.
It's in the technical report if you have that handy.
Right. What I remember is the difference between the 10th and the 90th percentile, I'm going to make up the numbers because I remember, was like 15 to 18%, suggesting that 80% of hospitals are between 15% readmissions and 18% readmission, or a 3% gap between the best performers and the worst performers, if you think of the 90th and 10th percentile. First, I want to make sure I got that right. I understood.
That's about right.
I understood it. It's 2.9%
or something. I think Elizabeth has the actual number.
It's the 10th percentile is 15.4 and the 90th is 18.2.
So it's a 2.8% difference between the best and worst. We've talked about all the shrinkage issues, but it does concern me. I guess the question has been, does it raise any concerns for you in terms of when I think about this as a consumer, that's a pretty tiny difference, because are you going to make a difference? Are you going to choose a hospital based on 17 versus 16%? Probably not, and yet like a third of the hospitals are in that range. So is this going to really give us much information is one question, but that's a philosophical question, and you may not be able to answer that. But a question that was raised yesterday was, so what proportion of hospitals will statistically be labeled as outliers based on the overall model?
Right.
That you can.
I can answer that in a non-answer way, which is we have not bootstrapped the data yet, so I don't know how many outliers we have. But I can tell you with some confidence that because we have real volumes here, we're talking about big hospitals are a median of 700-something admissions, we are very confident that even though there's a narrow distribution, that the confidence intervals around any individual point are going to be narrow enough that we will still be able to identify outliers. The question of whether a narrow distribution means that this is not a quality signal or that we're not useful or, you know, is a separate question. And I would argue as a clinician that we are all bad at readmissions. And so I think to some extent this is reflecting just general badness. And to some extent it's reflecting the fact that nobody had any incentive to think about readmissions yet. And so primarily it's been driven by, you know, utilization and other things. I think that as people start to focus more on this as a quality indicator, we will start to see much bigger spread.
Your median is around 17 or 16%, does that sound right? And the Jenks paper that kind of got all this going, they use all cause, and they were at around 20%. Do you have any explanation for why a 4-point gap between the Jenks approach and your approach?
So the Jenks data is actually totally different data. You'll see that the third or fourth most common readmission or condition leading to readmission is psychiatric disorders. They included psychiatric hospitals and all kinds of other things in that data that we did not. The second thing is that they use DRG and we use conditions. And the third thing is that this is risk adjusted and this was Roberts. The mean should come to the same. I think that primarily it's driven by different populations.
Warren, is that up, delayed, down, or, oops. Richard, I think we can have time for one or two more questions. Richard?
So, quick question. With the hierarchical model, you can take into account hospital effects, so you could create a dummy variable for a safety net hospital, and you could discern if there were any marginal differences, and I just wonder if that had been done, and I think it would be useful to do because we are making, you know, policy decisions, so not that we would change what you've done, but just to understand from a societal perspective if there's a difference.
So we never put a dummy variable in for safety in a hospital. We did this analysis, though, whichever, wherever it happens to be, and looking at the proportion of Medicaid as a proxy for that. Did we ever put that into a model and see how the model changed in performance? We did not do that. But we did see how the performance of hospitals in those quartiles differed.
Thank you. Jim, you have the last question.
Thanks. You made a nice distinction between measures for accountability and measures for improvement and the fact that a unadjusted measure could be used for improvement. I know in our system, data that really drives improvement is data that we can bring to a local level and stratify and do in a timely way. And that for us it would be huge to be able to do things like know differences in subpopulations by people who are discharged home versus discharged to SNF, people who are discharged to different kinds of different outpatient settings and so forth. All of those would require information about the difference on the overall performance on the measure that incorporates the risk as well as the raw readmission rate. And all those are kinds of analyses that a person couldn't do with a model that can only be implemented centrally. So I'm wondering how in the improvement work that you talk about, you would navigate that kind of understanding and provide data that drives when you can't actually produce the risk-adjusted rate for those different kinds of subpopulations that would let you narrow down in on the problem.
Yeah, well, you know, we're outliers for heart failure and for pneumonia. We can't reproduce that internally, but what we do is we look at raw rates for heart failure. We have looked at different discharge positions and different units, and all we have broken our data down that way. And we just trust that our raw data from time to time are stable enough X our interventions that we can look at changes and attribute them to our interventions. In terms of this model, we don't have data that we have confidence in to include things like that, like disposition. We don't believe in the administrative data around that part, so we don't include it in our models. But people internally look at things like that all the time, and I don't think that they require being able to match that directly to the risk-adjusted measure. What the risk-adjusted measure does is tell us overall we have a problem, and then it's up to us to figure out what the problem is and how to handle it.
Thank you very much, and I would like to add my gratitude to the committees for your rapid turnaround, rapid cycle productivity on at our request. I think we're on public comment now.
Yeah, April, can you open the lines if there are any public or member comments to address the committee?
Certainly. All lines are now open.
Or in the room. Nope. So we will move then to we'll then move to voting.
Okay, Adela, it's all you. Adela, sorry.
Okay, so we know the drill, right? Scientific acceptability of measure properties. Are they both reliable and valid? Reliabilities, precise specifications. Testing validity is looking at specifications consistent with evidence, testing threats to validity, exclusions, risk adjustment, stratification, meaningful differences, and comparability in data sources.
Sorry. I'm aware that we're voting up and down with based on the measure as it is. We had some discussion about whether there's a possibility to make the vote contingent on any changes, or is that on the table, or is this assuming that no changes can be made to the measure and the measure is going to stand as is, are we voting up or down?
I'm going to leave that to Andrew.
Well, I think there should be a proposal, right?
Right. I think what would be helpful, we've done this before, is have all of you outline what you think you would like to see done, and then we'd have to hear from the developer on whether that's possible in the time frame we have, and I looked at Tarun and Alexis in that, and then you can vote on based on that contingent for these changes. We can definitely do that. Yeah, what might make more sense is right now have you vote on it as is, see where we are with that, and then move to the next.
Got it. So, and if it passes, then there's no opportunity to make proposals to modify it, but if it fails, then we have the opportunity to bring it up.
That's it.
Let me just go on record as saying I think that's the wrong order. But if we are going to seriously consider, and I realize that if the decision is to vote on it as is, then that, so be it. We should do that. If, in fact, the committee is saying we are open to suggesting modifications, it's my opinion that to vote first is not in the spirit of that.
Maybe it would help. Let's do it this way. We go through this every single time. Should we see what the modifications are? See if you all are willing to entertain them. And then
when we report.
That's
okay.
Fine.
If we're going to go down that road, what I would really ask you to do is we don't want to be mobilizing a massive effort here to propose a bunch of things to the measures developer that may or may not. Let's focus on, I'm going to just do this randomly as in my, and you can all throw, you know, stuff at me. No more than three. Okay, so hit your cards up soon if you've got real issues, because I think we're not going to go more than three recommendations.
So procedurally, this is how we'll handle it. You members of the committee can suggest a response, a change to the measure. The developer will respond on whether that's feasible. The timeline that we're considering is that the updates need to be sent to the committee by the 13th. Remember, we're dealing with an expedited review, and the committee will have to have a call to review these updates on the 15th or 16th. So on our current timeline, that's what we're dealing with. Now, whether we can have some flexibility in the timeline will be up to leadership at N2F, but this is based on our current timeline here. So,
okay, and here's the local timeline. The local timeline is we are over time. So I would really ask people to be very concise and very specific, and with measures developers, very, it's doable, it's not doable, and not a whole lot of, you know, delay. Ashish?
You know where I'm going. I would like hospitals' past performance, and personally I would recommend that we use the last 5 years of performance as part of the part of what goes into the model for predicting what that hospital's expected rate should be.
We think that would be a real challenge to get done in a very short time frame. And I would just comment also that the downside of that is that it makes it very hard for hospitals that are improving to show improvement.
So that's probably not.
I think it would be hard for us to get done in this time frame.
Richard?
Sorry, can I just add that we are developing the measure, you know, for and with CMS, and so obviously it's not our unilateral decision at Yale too. So those decisions would have to go back to CMS.
Well, I mean, I think that approach is arguable. I personally would not support that approach for many reasons. So I would not ask the developer to do that. You know, listening to the discussion, I'm mindful of the fact that we want to uncover disparities, and so we don't want to bake them into the model. I just wonder if there's some way, because that the developers might suggest a way to, at the same time, be equitable in our payment, since we're basing payment on this, is there a way we can both be equitable and reveal the disparities? Your thoughts on that?
So I would just first separate the measure and then how the measure results are used for any payment. And I think we mentioned yesterday that, you know, any hospitals that are struggling that have a high proportion of FCS or for any other reason, you know, a policy response can be to support those hospitals, and that is part of what's in the Affordable Care Act. But in terms of making a transition on FCS, that's, as you know, a really challenging and complex issue for it's a policy decision, and we'd have to. I can't make any commitment today on whether that would be doable or not, because it's clearly going to be a decision that CMS ultimately has to make.
So as is, okay, so it's probably not as well.
Just one brief comment on that. Again, any payment issues are outside our purview. CMS could choose to, and in fact, I think might, you know, perhaps differentially pay based on the patient population, but that's not in the measure.
Right?
Thank you for sending the article last night, by the way. I just want to read one line from that and add two brief suggestions. Line said, for example, while medical comorbidities may account for a large proportion of risk in some populations, social determinants may disproportionately influence risk in socioeconomically disadvantaged populations. Our review found that few models have incorporated such variables. I agree with that point. And I realize the complexities associated with trying to incorporate that into the model. However, looking for the keys under the light post, because that's where the light is, isn't going to necessarily help you find the keys. I would suggest that there be some attempt to bake into the model some measure of that disparity whether it's housing stability over time, employment status, payer mix, there are certain things that can be put into the model which could serve as reasonable proxies for that. My suggestion is to, rather than simply dismiss them, to include those as a piece. I do think that the article was correct, and my concern is that the primary focus is to improve quality. We may be missing that opportunity.
Can I ask the developers to respond to that quickly? I think you probably already answered that with respect to Richard, but please.
So it is certainly true that socioeconomic factors play an important role in emissions, and the question is twofold. First, how would we handle that in the model? We could stratify our results on a patient level. We could stratify our results on a hospital level. So we could report separate results for your low-income patients versus your high-income patients, and I'm not sure that the public would like to see that. I think that's a slightly peculiar thing to do. We could stratify our results by hospital. So if you are a hospital that takes care of low-income patients, we could compare you only to your peers. And then we have the funny situation of what if you're better than your peers, but you're still worse than the national average? How do we report you? Do we say that you're better? Is that really the message we want to give to consumers? It's a challenging thing to think through. We've thought a lot about this. And the second thing I would argue one more time, and I feel very strongly about this, as a person who is fixing readmissions at my hospital, the importance of socioeconomic status on readmission rates is not entirely fixed, and hospitals have a profound role to play in changing that risk. And in terms of the way that they perform, we have cut our heart failure readmission rate by 33% in the past year, and we have the same low-income patients that we had a year ago. And we have worked incredibly hard with those patients to really improve their outcomes. So I am reluctant to endorse the fact that socioeconomic status is immutable and a risk factor that can't be changed.
Thank you very much. We have time for one more. Ashish?
Sherry?
Elliot?
Yeah. I don't know where we just left that discussion on MBS. I didn't hear the developer say that it was not possible to do. I would echo the comment before in saying that I'd personally love to see something in there addressing MBS down at the patient level, certainly not at the reporting level.
The way I understand this, and help me if I'm wrong here, is that the answer was the claims data don't, beyond Medicaid, the claims database, administrative database, does not provide you with enough detail to put a credible SES measure into the model. Is that accurate?
It would be very hard to define something that people could agree on that we felt comfortable with.
Does that answer your question, Elliot?
Okay.
Okay.
I have a process question. I understand that our purview is up or down on the measure. Do we ever forward measures with any policy recommendations, recognizing it's up to CMS to determine how they're going to use them? But do those recommendations from a committee like this survive and go with a measure or not? Is it just because the stratification by SES seems to be the out here in how the measure is implemented. So you let the variability flow through without putting SES in the model, but you could stratify your sample in groups. Now, would a recommendation like that survive if it went forward, the measure got forwarded from NQF to CMS?
Yes, especially if it's something around stratification. Again, something specific to the measure as opposed to the payment policy very much so would be in our purview, and I that's a very reasonable request if that's something the committee wanted to consider, that, you know, these measures should be stratified. Again, I don't know how difficult that is to do. I don't know what the implementation issues are, but that would be something, I think, very reasonable to entertain.
I mean, that to me is the way a way that we can address this concern. It's not a measure about, the measure stays as is, but that's right. What we would recommend is that the use of the measure be stratified according to payer mix either by quartiles or some other maybe just two groups over a certain cut point of Medicaid patients in the payer mixes and have two different groups. That would be my recommendation.
The committee can definitely make that recommendation in the final report. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, Alan.
I'm sorry. I have to strongly disagree with the idea of reporting in a stratified way. I think it did, and again, perhaps the public folks, you know, the consumer advocates would like to comment, but I think it sends a very, very negative message in terms of not having one standard.
Okay, so here's where we aren't. I don't... I've heard the measures developers really respond to what's possible and what's doable and what their limitations are. So far, correct me if I'm wrong, committee, but I haven't heard anybody say, you know, come forward with a revised recommendation that the measures developers think they can deliver on. Has anybody heard that? That's what I'm asking, is because I wanted to see if somebody else heard something I didn't. And if so, because we need to vote, and I'm trying to clarify what we're voting on. So, Tanya, are you about to?
Well, I just was going to respond to Elliot since he was asked, you know, he said that it was a bad idea. I would say there, to me, there's a distinction. You know, oftentimes we, and for my job, we ask that measures be stratified by race, ethnicity, language, gender, but that's really for process measures because, you know, that's where you kind of can identify where are the disparities. And with outcomes, it is a different animal. You know, you don't want to necessarily make those distinctions because, you know, you do want to see the same outcomes for everyone. So.
Okay. Brent,
can I respond to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my response is that normally I would absolutely agree with Elliot and the perspective that was just raised. When the outcome is really arguably completely within the purview of whatever entity is being held accountable for that outcome. I just think that there is so much about readmissions that takes place outside of the walls of the hospital that's the justification in this case for recommendation that the measure be reported in a stratified fashion. It doesn't, in my mind, mean that there's two standards of quality. Normally, I would absolutely agree with Elliot's comments. I just don't in this circumstance.
So, given what we've heard from the measures developer, because I'm now trying to synthesize what I've heard so far, the data that you have that most closely approximates SES is Medicaid, and you show data that there really isn't evidence that there is a distributional difference based on Medicaid stratification. Would you be willing to go along with some reporting recommendations stratified on Medicaid?
I'm not sure if you're asking would we go along with it, because I think this is a process question. I think the committee's considering making that recommendation that the measure would be implemented that way. I guess I'm trying to...
It seems that the
question, we want an 8 commitment from CMS in advance that they would implement it that way.
It does seem that the question of reporting actually is outside of the scope of what the measure developer would be responsible for. So really, it seems that would just be a recommendation that the committee would hold in its final, in its draft report up to the CSAC and further on the process.
Yes and no. NGF does have a criteria that have actually just been updated by our disparities committee that are called disparities sensitive criteria, identifying measures that where there are known disparities, and this, I think one could argue, not clear, there are known disparities in this area, where stratification is preferred. And so those measures come out, and there's an indication this is a measure that should always be stratified. So I don't think I think you need to decide if it's the will of the committee. We haven't heard that yet. But I think it could be an accompanying recommendation that goes along with the measure when it goes out of public comment that suggests the will of the committee is or is not that measure should be stratified or that CMS should look into other ways. And again, it doesn't have to be decided at this moment. It's more of a reporting issue, but I do think it's something we should get a sense of the will of the committee first.
Okay, so here's the two options now that I hope I'm getting right. The two options are one, to go forward with an as-is, no adjustment of hemline, no addition of lace onto the garment, and the other is the accompanying recommendation for reporting. It's a recommendation for a reporting stratification based on proportion of Medicaid patients. So does anybody hear something I didn't hear?
Can can I just ask also, I don't know how specific you want or need to be and how you would stratify, quote-unquote, for SES, just because, you know, you can do safety net, non-safety net, you can do percent Medicaid, you know, there's many, you can do zip code, income, blah, blah, blah. And did you mean at the by patients within a hospital or by hospitals with a certain proportion? So I think those things all actually, it's been shown in, by a number of people that those lead to different groups of hospitals, and I just don't know whether you want to get to that level of specificity, the implications of leaving it open, or that those are just very different things.
No. We don't want to be too detailed because I'm afraid that if we put too much specification around it, then we're providing guidance that we really oughtn't to in terms of our various, you know, we can get into a whole day's worth debate about what the right marker for SES is and how these data should be reported out. I think a recommendation that they should be reported by stratification would make many committee members more enthusiastic about supporting the measure going forward. But now I'm a little bit confused about procedure. Do we vote on the as-is measure and then the addition, or do we just fold that in?
It's overall, it's just a recommendation on the measure going forward. Is there really...
But maybe we could just, we have a simple yes-no question to see how much of the committee supports that recommendation. I don't know. Or maybe there's a better sense than I have.
Okay.
Point on that? Sorry, just very quickly. So Medicaid is the wrong measure to use because 47-48% of hospitalizations are paid for by Medicare. And so, and you can imagine that you have lots of poor Medicare patients who are being picked up in these models. And so there are other approaches. I want to get into what those other approaches are, but I would only argue that the spread in performance we've seen by proportion Medicaid really does not capture how much variation there is by safety net status if you use other measures. The safety net hospitals by proportion minorities, other stuff tend to do much, much worse than what we see up there. So it's my way of saying there's a bigger problem than what these data suggest. And there are lots of ways of handling it, none of which we need to get into. Yeah. But I would favor that we keep SES on the table as an important issue and not, in my mind, be affected by those.
Okay. I'm going to make then the following recommendation, that we vote with a reporting recommendation attached to include some reporting stratification by SES, and it's a recommendation. It is not changing the core scientific content of the measure. How many would favor that vote right now on the measure plus a recommendation for no? We're getting the okay, so that's what we're now, everybody, is everybody clear? Do we have any, okay, let me try it one more time. We're voting on the measure as is for its scientific reliability and validity, plus the recommendation that the data be reported in with some stratification. Go ahead.
It seems to me we might want to have two votes. The first is as is. And then regardless of the outcome of the as-is, either up or down, we can then vote whether we want to make a recommendation on the SES issue.
I'd favor that.
Okay, now, are you going to have to do that over again? No. All right, let's just do a body count. How many people would actually support that recommendation? Hands. Stratification by socioeconomic status, however it gets defined.
We actually have slides ready in the order that everybody described. So let me, Adila's going to project it in just a second. Let's make sure that you all agree with what we just did.
And I apologize for the messy process.
Point of clarification, we talked about using the SES or the stratification, whatever it may be, for reporting. Is that just for hospital compare whatever or how CMS may use it, which I know we can't dictate or tell in any other way, like for pay for performance, et cetera?
I don't think we can be specific about that recommendation because, again, that would take us another day's worth of whatever.
That's a whole
nother.
Okay. So what we have done, based on the last comment that was said, we can change this again if needed. We think it's easier to try to do this electronically. We would first have you vote on scientific acceptability of the measure, because right now that's what you have. And then the second one will be, does the committee support the reporting recommendation? And that's a yes, no. Does that seem reasonable?
Just one small clarification. When you say would report, vote on the measure first, I'm assuming that means as is
as
without
is.
Stratification.
Correct.
Why would that be different than the vote yesterday?
Because you've had new information presented to you today.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Adila.
Okay, so on scientific acceptability of measure properties, was the criterion scientific acceptability of measure properties met? Well, one for yes, two for no, and you can start now.
Okay, I'll do a roll call for the members on the phone. Elliot? Yes, no? On scientific acceptability?
Yes.
Okay. Patricia McDermott?
Yes.
And Mark Williams? Okay, thank you.
I think we're missing one person. Yeah.
Mark, Mark, are you on the phone?
We have 11 for, or actually, 13 for yes, 6 for no.
So the next thing you will vote on is the reporting recommendation.
Again, one for yes, two for no.
Does the committee support the reporting recommendation, one yes, two no? Elliot?
No.
And Patricia?
No. We have 8 yes and 11 no. So on usability, to what extent was the criterion usability met? 1 for high, 2 moderate, 3 low, 4 insufficient.
That's the usability criteria, Elliot. It's 1 high, 2 moderate, okay, 3 low, insufficient. And he said low. And Patricia?
Moderate. Oh, I think I'm missing one person. Oh, okay. Yes. Wait, can you press it? Oh, there we go. So we have 1 for high, 8 for moderate, 11 for low, and 4 for insufficient. Or 0 for insufficient.
Okay, so we're voting on feasibility again. Remember that these are all in light of the new information, so you're revoting because of the new information provided by the measures developers.
To what extent was the criterion feasibility met? 1 for high, 2 moderate, 3 low, 4 insufficient.
This is a feasibility vote. Elliot?
High.
And Patricia?
High. And we're short 2 votes if everyone wants to vote again. So So 14 high, 5 moderate, 0 for low, and 0 for insufficient.
Okay, now we do the overall summary vote on the measure.
Okay, so we're asking, does the measure meet all N2F criteria for endorsement? 1 for yes, 2 for no.
Overall, Elliot?
Yes.
And Patricia?
Yes. We have 12 yes and 8 no.
I truly want to thank the measures developers again for what you've done to help us, and every single one of these committee members that for really doing the job and being as diligent as you've been. Thank you again very much.
Sherry,
the committee as well. Thank you. Elliot?
Sherry, can I make one comment?
Yes.
And this really gets back to the issue of SES, and I understand, obviously we have not gone with a recommendation about reporting stratification, although I suspect many of us agreed that SES has a very important role in readmissions and somehow ought to be taken into account. For me, it was simply the issue of reporting by SES and what my sense of the public perception of the institution would be around doing that. I would very much like to see, some recommendation statement, assuming, the committee agrees and it's the will of the committee, that we do believe SES is important and that, there ought to be some thought given to how to incorporate SES into the model. That's a little bit more of a general statement than talking about or than recommending that, something be included at the reporting level versus the risk level. And I just wonder if other members of the committee would agree to that, to such a statement, and if NQF feels that, that would be appropriate.
Elliot, I'm not going to revisit this at the committee level, but I'm going to ask Helen to comment on drafting a recommendation and circulating it to us afterwards.
She's fine doing that, but...
Can I just say one quick thing? It's Brian from home. One, just to thank the committee and everyone who's been involved here, but your message will be loudly heard. I just want to let everyone know that the comments you've made, all of the comments, but in addition, specifically the comments about the socioeconomic status, will go back to CMS. We are taking them and listening to them very carefully. We understand the importance of this issue. We recognize the care with which you've thought about this issue and are expressing this concern. We've heard it from others, and what we're challenged to do is to figure out how to manage it, because we, on one hand, don't want hospitals to be unfairly characterized, but we don't want people chasing quality issues that really represent problems that reside within their communities. On the other hand, we don't want to create, as you said, Elliot, a two-level system. And we don't want to obscure important disparities that may exist within our society in performance. So this is I just want to be clear. We're listening very carefully to you. We will send this message back to CMS. We are sending it back to our group. And we will work hard to try to ensure that this is taken under consideration. And we welcome any suggestions from anyone who's listening or anyone who's in the room. And we want to improve this. So it would be great for a statement from the committee, but the work that you've done has already made an impact, and I think that, we're going to work to think hard about this and try to figure out how to proceed, but we welcome any suggestions, too, because it's not easy.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
I truly appreciate all of both comments, and it's Krumholtz at yale.edu. Is that accurate?
Krumholtz at yale.edu.
There you go.
And send them on.
So, yeah, so I invite anyone to share their recommendations and opinions with.
And just one more processing. We will be writing a draft report for all of your review and comment very quickly, since it's got to get out too sweet. But we'll try to obviously incorporate this further discussion in there, even if there's not a specific recommendation. But clearly, this is a major sticking point for the committee. We'd love to have somebody kind of break this logjam and figure out the right approach to allow us to understand the issues by SES, but not obscure disparities. So.
And we've listened to all the comments to FES, but all of them are important to us. So I just want to make sure it's not like we get approval and we go back and we haven't listened. We have listened very carefully to all the comments that have been made.
Thank you again. Okay, I think, right, we're ready to. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
I am going to take a poll on what? Bruce, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to lend my support. I hope that our report, that our draft report, could just highlight what we've all thought about in terms of threats to the future value here. I wanted to lend my support to that.
Thank you very much. I'm sure that Helen and the staff of NQF have listened to us very carefully. I would like to do the following, and if I get a massive pushback, please tell me. I would like to go push through this break and invite people to take a bio break or get coffee or everything on an individual level and keep moving us forward so that we TikTok. Is there anyone who finds that offensive or would like to do?
I would say that it unfairly discriminates against a measure developer who would be talking and could use one of those breaks.
Yeah. There is no such thing as a five-minute break.
If I can run to the front of the line.
If the measures developer is insisting, then you got 5 minutes, but tick-tock, I will round you all up and find you individually. Before we get started on the last measures development, the next measures development piece, I would like to invite Tanya and really limit it to 5 minutes, a total conversation. Tanya, Michael, and Leslie to raise issues about the basic accountability, usability issues from each one of their perspectives. Because I really want to sort of flesh this out in terms of in getting in this transcript and also the report by NQF, if you could give us a succinct issues of concern for this measure and not more broadly than that, this specific measure for use for in the national profile for accountability and quality improvement. Michael, you want to go first? Again, please, if you can, keep your comments tight. The one that we just passed.
I'll be succinct. The purpose of our work was to give or not give an NQF approved or validated measure to CMS for its use. And we were instructed in the first part of the day yesterday that the purpose of that use was twofold. One was accountability and one was performance improvement. And I am certainly persuaded about the statistical scientific validity discussions we've had, and respect the vote of the committee. We haven't had actually a subsequent conversation again about the usability. So I'm still stuck over the fact that the reporting will be 1 to 2 years after the event. So we're basically holding facilities accountable for work or experience that may be 1 to 2 years old. And the ability to use that information for performance improvement, knowing how rapidly the fields are moving, 1 to 2 years later seems to me to be very limited. I lost my thought. If it comes back, I'll let you know.
I'm sorry, I interrupted your train of thought there. Are you sure?
And the only other comment I've made is that I am not persuaded that the hospital-specific metric, in addition perhaps to socioeconomic status and perhaps others that are community-based, adequately assigns accountability to the hospital for the results of the metric.
And that's particular to this specific measure we just passed, right?
Sure, yes.
Thank you. Tanya?
I think for the purposes of public reporting, that this measure will not be very useful to consumers. And I know the arguments have been made that consumers don't necessarily use this information to begin with, but our philosophy is, you know, we put the best information out there and hopefully we will get them more engaged. And with the advent of an all-condition, all-cause readmission measure, the potential is there for more consumers to use it because the readmission measures that we currently have are not for the types of conditions that people normally go online to check their hospitals for if they're having a heart attack. But when you're broadening it to all condition, we really did see this great potential there. So I'm not really going to speak to the accountability issue because I think there's a whole lot of issues there in terms of how well this will work for holding hospitals accountable. But in terms of transparency and public reporting, I didn't really see, and I apologize that I missed some of this morning's discussion, but I still am skeptical that the results when reported on Hospital Compare or on other websites will provide consumers with useful information they can make choices on.
Thanks very much. And Leslie?
My concern is on usability is really more recommendations on how the reporting is used and explained well for the public. In rural communities like Idaho, if this information is proved useful to consumers and they seek it out, can they, a patient who's not reviewing this information with a high degree of understanding, make inappropriate self-selections? And the distance factor for hospitals, the community, lack of community safety net or connectivity of others to provide social support, to provide follow-up, is even heightened in rural communities where you might have 200 miles between hospitals. So I just caution the group to take a look when reporting specifically around rural hospitals and how do we provide that kind of information that's useful.
Thanks very much for those comments. I'm sure that Helen will make sure that they're in the report, the committee's report, is reflected concerns along the lines of accountability, quality improvement, and reporting, that, as I heard. Thank you very much. So should we tee up the...
Can I just make one other additional question about that one, just as a process piece? Very briefly, I respect the opinions of my colleagues here. The question I have about that, though, is how are those comments specific to this measure? I think many of us have a healthy skepticism about the utility of an all-cause readmissions measure, generically speaking, in terms of its utility and usefulness at the consumer or hospital level. I'm not sure how that reflects this specific measure individually.
I'm going to invite those with the consumer perspective in general to raise their concerns, focus on the specific measure, and give them to Helen for the report, because I think that will allow them a little more time than, you know, we have here to really develop their issues.
In 20 seconds, from the consumer perspective, the issue isn't with an all-condition, all-cause readmission. That's, you know, to us, that's a glide path to system redesign. So it's really more about the public reporting, the transparency, and how it's reported.
Thank you. Okay, we have the next measures developer. We have 10 minutes allotted. If you could make your presentation succinct and ready, set, go.
That would be a first. So thank you again for the opportunity to come back here to talk about this. So while these were generated news this morning to put into the presentation here, we had done these kinds of graphs before in the previous model years. We just hadn't done it for the current model year. But these are the plots of the actual versus expected for the risk deciles. We have an additional source of error here. It is my ability to draw a red line at a 45-degree angle onto the graph. But you can see if you were to assume that that red line were going to the origin, trying to map it out there, that our blue dots are lying up like they're supposed to on the red line. If we can go scroll down, we want to scroll up here. So this is the Medicare age is 18 to 64. this is our Medicare 65 and older. I think my line is tilted a little bit here. It should the bottom should move up a little bit, and you'll see that they're in line. If we scroll up again, it's similar pattern and similar drawing error on the red line. But if we scroll up onto, if you go to the tab above for the Hasbro Lemesho tests tab there, we can see what the actual differences are here, that we're talking less than 1% at each of the deciles. To Lauren's comments, this is in the predicted, is in the model data set, so it's going to be naturally better. We don't have a data set to validate on this morning. So, but hopefully this is responsive to your concerns about that. So we feel like we have adequate discriminative ability in the models. Let's see, our second question I believe we're to respond to is the FCS issue. So I was chatting about this with other folks at MCQA who have been in this business longer than me and said, you big dummy, there's plenty of examples of high FCS variability between plans within the same markets. And so I retract my overstatement and the Red Fox references. So what I think doesn't change our opinion that the we feel similarly to Yale that risk adjusting out variability due to SES is not appropriate, but we also have heard the feedback of the group that this is important. We feel that we take this into account to some degree through our measurement through separate product lines. So we measure the commercial groups separately, Medicare groups separately. And if we were to build this measure for Medicaid, we would have a separate measurement for them. And would hope that there's sufficient similarity within those groups. I think apart from the concerns that were raised about the difficulty of actually measuring FCS accurately, feasibility is one of the four NQF criteria in this measure, and that translates to us in terms to the implementability with the data collectors and the people that are reporting the data. And for us, collecting the data from health plans would require the health plans to go beyond their normal data collection processes to collect their readmission rates based on individual patient zip codes. And we'd have to come up with a way to link then census zip code information, assuming that we even believe those numbers as representative of SES, into that data set to then do the adjustments. So we think that in terms of the kind of the conceptual rationale for the inclusion, which and I realize the panel disagrees with, but also the practical burden and that feasibility is an important criterion for the implementation here, that we would argue that it would be necessary to leave FCS out of measurement. But we would certainly be open to exploring ways to shoehorn it in if there are ideas and suggestions. I think in terms of the usability of the measures, so I think we sort of talked about this as the Yale measure is a CMS measure. The NCQA measure is a CMS measure as well. The CMS is has financed the development of this through a performance measurement contract for our geriatric measurement advisory panel. And so we've built a whole suite of measures for health plan monitoring for Medicare Advantage plans. So I think at first cut, we think that the measures are usable and are important because CMS has felt that they're important. It is important to have the accountability both at the hospital level and at the health plan level, and they've recognized that, even if they're funding it through different groups within CMS, that we think that there's traction on there's opportunity for improvement and addressing the problem of readmission from both sides, whether from the hospital perspective or from the health plan perspective. I think as a second element to that, I think we're in a similar line with how Laura had sort of described how they use care performance measures at with her hospital at Yale, that we think of this as the same process for our health plans, that we provide a national standard and benchmark for how to measure things that would allow for consistent comparison across plans, but is also useful, and so that gets at the accountability function, but is also usable at the quality improvement level as a benchmark to guide your rapid cycle improvements. No one, I don't think, will ever have rapid cycle versions of this measure and doing the risk adjustment. There will always be that lag. But we think that there's, for hospitals who are able to look at their real-time results on readmissions, or for health plans, look at their real-time results on readmission behavior, and to link that to the performance on these metrics. We have, HEDIS is a large national program, and health plans invest a significant amount of money to improve those rates. And central to that has been having our metrics as a guide for their individual quality improvement efforts. So we think that based upon our experience, that our readmission measures would be in the same vein and have the same utility. And that's been the voice of the health plans that have responded in our public comment.
Robert, we're at 10 minutes. Okay. I know you. If you have a few more things, you know, feel free to take another five. But
no, I think that just the last thing that I would say is that I think the last thing I just would want to mention, I think because we I've been thinking that we're going to talk just about the acceptability, scientific acceptability. Just slide to the feasibility component is we would say that the primary evidence of the feasibility of our measure is that we've already collected it for 1 year, that the measure is has been implemented by health plans. The CMS is already in the process of using the measures within the STAR system, that is both for health plan choice and for incentive processes. NCQA has every intention of using the measure and the results for its own public reporting processes and products like Quality Compass. And they have the opportunities included in other things like our health plan rankings and other types of things. So this measure is very real, very feasible, and very usable by a variety of folks, and has been in demand by all perspectives, provider and plan and consumer and employer group and everyone else. And we think that there's utility to having this health plan perspective in combination and in complement to harmonized with the hospital-based measure.
Thank you very much. Now, this measure is open to the panel for discussion. Questions? Ashish?
Just a point of clarification, and thank you as well for all the terrific work. It's really helpful, and the risk adjustment model that you guys use, forget the whole shrinkage issue that we've talked about. And we have belabored. Just the strict risk adjustment. My sense from looking at the data from what you guys presented is it's very, very close to the CMS risk adjustment in terms of the approach, the HCCs, what goes into the straight model. Can you tell me whether that's true, how close it is, if there are important conceptual differences? Again, we're not going to talk about the hierarchical modeling part of it, but just the straight risk adjustment.
Sure.
Are there important differences?
If I could ask Alexis, if you could skip to the desktop, there's one other sheet that we'd put in. The NQF harmonization sheet in the middle there. So we kind of went through looking side by side the exclusions between the two models, and I haven't verified this with Yale folks, so they can obviously correct me where I'm wrong. And looking side by side also on the risk adjustment strategy. But I think for the most part, if we're looking at, you know, we have obvious difference on accountable entity, but we have similarities on the continuous enrollment criteria, similarities in age. We're looking at acute hospitalizations. We are handling transfer similarly. We want the last place. We scroll down. I don't believe they have a restriction to have an overnight stay for the index hospital stay, but we have you have to be overnight. So we get around that sort of observation room problem that people were concerned about yesterday. So I think side by side, things are pretty similar. We include behavioral health, they don't. But for the most part, those types of exclusions about the definition of the denominator and numerators is pretty consistent. If we go to the risk adjustment strategy, sort of doing a hasty sort of comparison here between the models here, you know, obviously, you know, they're doing the hierarchical, we're doing the indirect standardization through the logistic model. For the reasons described yesterday, that the clustering problem is kind of systematic and there's not very much that we can do about that. In terms of the risk adjusters, they're using age, we're using age. They have surgery built into their model. We have it as a covariate. They have the index condition. They're using the CCS categories. We're using the CCs from the CMS ACC system. But there's probably substantial overlap in what those categories are. And then the comorbidities, I believe, look like they're using the CCs, and we aggregated those to the ACCs. But conceptually, pretty darn similar. I sort of yield to the Yale folks if there's any misstated here.